Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I'm Dan Peck, and we are in the ESPN 106.7 studio. Bill Cameron is on assignment today. He talked about a little bit last week, too, and I don't know who else constitutes the all-star band these days. I probably could look that up, but Bill Cameron is seeing Ringo Starr and company tonight, and I think we have reached the point where if you get the chance to see one of the two living Beatles, you know, take every opportunity you can. So yeah, Ringo Starr still on tour with Bill has seen the All Star Band before and he's talked about it, but it's like it's usually a super group of musicians from different bands that play one or two of their they all sort of take center stage and play one or two of their signature hits, and Ringo does some Beatles songs. I think they close with Yellow Submarine. That's usually sort of a tradition there. But we'll get a recap from Bill Cameron about the Ringo Starr and the All Star Band experience when he returns to the show later this week. But stepping in, pinch hitting on a Tuesday is someone that we've talked to on Thursdays and Fridays of late, but coming in a little bit earlier in the week, and always happy. And this goes well with his schedule because he's got some stuff going on closer to the weekend. It's our good buddy, the founder and CEO of the and chief and head booker of the Auburn Observer. It's Justin Ferguson. How you doing, bud? Welcome to the show on a Tuesday. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no, looking forward to this one. It's always interesting when it's just me and you in the studio. There's no telling what it'll be like. And we recorded a podcast last night for the Observer that you can listen to today, and that might be a little bit of a precursor to what's about to go on here for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, Thermometry, your new episode of the
yeah,
the
check Observer. It out. We talked about Auburn football recruiting and kind of the Hugh Freeze and the situation that the Tigers are in.
Almost called the show Heat Check, but I was like, surely we've used that for basketball.
We have.
At some point, we have called an episode Heat Check. So I would have had to do Heat Check 2 or something. Would have been, we would start sequelizing.
We talked.
Roman numerals would be the policy, I think, if we start reusing titles like that.
We talked college football, the new college football video game that's about to come out. And we talked Jedi Broom in the NBA draft and got into some other fun topics as well. So you can check that out at The Observer. And wrote a story about Malcolm Simmons on Monday that you can read. And then tomorrow, wrote a column about Janiah Broome and Auburn in the NBA draft and kind of the situation they find themselves in, heading into what could be another really, really fun season.
Yeah, we've got a couple different sports that we can hit on in detail today because you've got some of the stuff we covered on that podcast last night, which you can check out on Justin's website. But the thought of the Janiah Broome NBA draft, and there's different ripples there. It could even impact Jabari Smith, who suddenly finds himself in a very different situation with Kevin Durant as a teammate. We talked about that a little bit on the podcast as well, and I thought you had some interesting sort of some interesting thoughts about, and again, not you fully acknowledge you're not necessarily a boots on the ground recruiting reporter.
No,
like that's not that's not your specialty, but you can take a look at different trends and I think you can look at what if things don't drastically change on the recruiting trail, what if anything that does for the pressure Hugh Freeze is under.
Oh, yeah.
in the first half of the season. The point I made yesterday, Justin, it seems like We've seen situations in the past where a program was on the fence about making a change, and something that played in the coach's favor was not just the youth of the roster, but the direction, which the youth of the roster would probably help Hugh Freeze when you think about the number of guys that could return. Unfortunately, that's outdated thinking.
Correct.
Because freshmen can leave, and you know, and
sophomores can leave. Everybody can leave,
and they do, and on a pretty frequent basis. So you know, you got to be careful thinking that a team is you know, is set for the future because of a young roster. But we've seen programs look at the recruiting situation and say, well, maybe you keep this coach for one more year and keep this recruiting class together. I feel like that was part of the Napier argument.
Yes,
was the yep. thought of keeping a recruiting class together and not making a drastic change. And it seems like, you know, if Florida can make good on the expectations going into this season, keeping Billy Napier might end up proving to be the right move. If you know, we'll see how it goes for Florida this year. But I think there are folks who are kind of bullish on them in no small part because of Lagway. But there's, you know, there's excitement there. Hugh Freeze seemingly will not be able to if things get off to a rocky start. Hugh Freeze and his supporters will not be able to point to, we'll look at how things are going in recruiting as evidence that despite what you see on the field, things are headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that, you know, these last two recruiting cycles, Auburn has been able to say, hey, there is playing time available, there is, you know, there are opportunities available right away. And now when you have such a young roster built on those recruiting classes, it's harder to sell that kind of early playing time because of what you've brought back and what you've been able to retain. On the flip side, you know, what allows teams to stockpile talent year in and year out? It's usually winning. You know, you look at a team like Alabama or Georgia or Texas, or, you know, I think those are the three best examples in the SEC, but we've seen it at other times. We've seen it at the best of times with Auburn as well. You know, how do you convince elite recruits? How do you convince blue chip recruits, top 10 recruiting classes full of guys, to be like, hey, you know what? I might not play right away, but I can wait because, you know, look at what could be done, what I could do, what kind of team I could be on if I wait my turn. I work, you know, I make my breakthrough at some point. And Auburn can't really do that right now because they've got that young talent and it has not turned into wins. So it is a wait and see at best right now for Auburn, and I think,
and that only intensifies the pressure.
Correct.
Like, I mean, for Hugh Freeze, and
you have to win. You have to prove that this is a place that you need to come and be willing to wait for opportunities. And I also think the transfer portal being what it is, you know, adds on to that pressure because, you know, I think Auburn doesn't have an elite recruiting class at the end of the season, but if they win enough, they can continue to flip and add on and get guys there. It's a lot tougher to do that if you're playing from behind and then you don't get the results on the field. These last couple of years, they've been able to be ahead of schedule with their recruiting. They're not at that point now. The bills do, so to speak, when it comes to the on-field results.
And I fully believe that with this recruiting, with this coaching staff and this program, that if they have a hot product on the field, they can parlay that into success on the recruiting trail.
Yeah.
You know, if you seem like a place where people want to be in those first couple of games of the season when you've got opportunities, both on the road to show yourself as a program and at home, you've made the point that you got Georgia at night. Like the thought, like if potentially the world of college football is watching Jordan-Hare Stadium that night because Auburn's off to a hot start, and now they've got the gold standard or one of the standard bearers in the conference coming to town, and it could be something of a legitimacy test as far as, are you a team having a hot start or are you a contender? Like, that's what could be at stake if you're off to the, you know, if you push the right buttons in the first couple of games. It could also be existential if you don't get off to a hot start.
And I would also say the thing that I think could make this not full-on panic mode time for Auburn with their recruiting is this staff has done a really good job of flipping and getting guys and closing well. So if you do get the results, it's not like this staff isn't, you know, inexperienced at doing the things they're going to have to do to close and have a really good recruiting class again, right? They have that. And look, there are guys who are going to be making decisions in July. I don't think Auburn's going to be in the top 10, you know, in recruiting in the next couple of months. I don't think they're going to make that drastic of a surge. They could make up some ground, but a lot of that is going to come down to folks. I mean, people are going to be waiting and seeing.
The thought that Auburn is in something of, it's a little bit like the Beetlejuice sort of limbo. Like you're in the halfway point, because Auburn, like you said, the programs that are able to recruit excellent class after excellent class, they can point to on-field success and say, join up and you wait your turn and you get your turn and you go to the NFL. And that's how it works at Ohio State, and that's how it works at Alabama, and that's how it works at Georgia. If you don't have that kind of success to point to, often what you need to be able to point to is playing time. And Auburn's got, like we said, a young roster, which means you can't really sell playing time at some of these positions, you know, immediate playing time, and you can't sell a recent track record of success on the field. And without either of those things, even a skilled recruiter and his staff could be struggling to keep up with a lot of the conference. And that's where Auburn finds itself right now. And I guess we talked about it a little bit yesterday too. You know, so much of this is seemingly wrapped up in what you have at quarterback. Like that's you know, ultimately that's the difference between a lot of these programs. That, you know, it's probably more pronounced in the NFL, where it's like these rosters are really close together and what you have at quarterback can make an enormous difference between one team and the next. In college, there's probably less parity than that, but still it makes a tremendous difference. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I don't think it's coincidence that this century the best seasons by Auburn quarterbacks have been the best seasons at Auburn, by and large. 04, 10, 13, 17, 19. Like these are the most successful seasons that Auburn has had, in large part, and they also happen to have incredibly successful quarterback play. I would imagine that there's going to be a correlation this year between what you get at the quarterback position. Maybe it's not the only thing, but Like we had the thought experiment yesterday on the show, Justin. If the only thing you told me about this season, the only guarantee you made about this season, is that Jackson Arnold is going over 4,000 passing yards, if that's the only thing I'm telling you about this year, what kind of season do you think Auburn's having? My guess is pretty good.
Like that's 4,000.
Yeah, that was the mention yesterday. Is that in 12? And I think Stetson had a 4,000 yard season the year Georgia destroyed TCU and was like one of the better teams of the last two decades. But like, yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, yeah, I mean, and
considering only six quarterbacks threw for 4,000 yards last year and one of them won the national title. Yeah, I don't.
And you can tinker with the number if you want, but you know what I mean. Like to me, it a lot of it's going to come down to, it's not the only thing, but like so much. And it's tough to, even if you feel good about Jackson Arnold, and there's reason to, like even if you feel good, like there's not, even someone with a better track record, it's hard to feel like you have a sure thing coming out of the portal, right? Like Auburn could have gone with, I don't know, like whoever you think is the surest thing that changed teams in the portal this offseason. John Mateer.
Yeah, Mateer probably.
Carson Beck. Like you can make your choice.
You keep saying Beck. I don't.
Well, he's one of the more successful. I'd say he's like of the guys who changed teams this offseason. Sure. Mateer and Beck are probably
the. At least you saw Mateer like put up really good numbers without a ton of talent around him. With Beck, it was like, man, is this dude holding the team back? Yeah, I don't know. I'm still stuck on the 4,000 thing because it's like
you can pick a different number, but like
Auburn's only had 2-3,000 passers ever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess
if they break
the
record by 800 yards, yeah, maybe. Yeah. If they break Damian Craig's record by, no, I mean, yeah, if it's 4,000, but then you're sitting here thinking about 4,000. I mean, a 4,000 yard season, if Auburn doesn't make it to the playoff, I mean, that's 300 yards a game.
I don't think I'm the one who picked 4,000 yesterday either. It's just that's where the number ended up.
If like, you gave me 3,000, okay, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably a pretty good season.
Yeah, okay,
like, you
yeah
know, probably. I mean, and you know, Peyton Thorne was yardage wasn't the problem last year. Peyton Thorne had 2,700 last year. It's the end product. I don't care about yardage. I do not care about yardage. I need to see points on the scoreboard, because last year's Auburn team is a great example of why yardage is can be very, very empty. You know, and again, I think it might be tougher to eyeball a number of like how many passing touchdowns, because of course if you can just score on the ground, that's good as well. But
Auburn was a force, like a yards per play force at times last year, right? And then but still even in yeah games in games where they didn't score 20 points.
They were 28th in the country last season in yards per game.
Yeah.
Passing wise, you know, passing offense last season, they were, let's see, yeah, 28th. They were 28th in passing yards per game last season. But they were.
You said it before, it's crucial downs.
71st
right
in scoring?
When the, I mean, whatever, however you want to classify.
Red zone.
Third down and red zone. Like yeah that feels like the. You know,
and I'm even less hung up on third down as I am in as red zone. I mean, I think third down was the bigger problem on defense. It's red zone. Auburn had.
And having a problem on third and long as an offense isn't just a third down problem.
No.
Like, that's the other thing, too, is like, oh, well, they weren't very good on third and seven or longer. And it's like, well, you, I mean, it's tough to be good on third or
Auburn
seven.
Auburn was 57th in the country last year on yeah third downs. They're okay. They're, you know, they weren't great. It's the fact that last season in SEC play, Auburn had the lowest rate of red zone trips that ended in touchdowns of any SEC team since that Tennessee squad that went 0-8 under Butch Jones.
While and that stat doesn't factor in the field goal mishaps. Like
I don't care about the field goal mishaps. Like kick and field goal, like touchdowns.
Sure.
Get in the red zone and score touchdowns. That's what's holding Auburn back.
I think there were probably games last year where if you're converting field goals at an app, like it's not the difference between it doesn't get you to Alabama and Georgia, but there could have been games last year maybe where
could
where,
there?
Ooh.
There isn't.
Yeah,
I've already looked it up.
I mean, Oklahoma,
because this was brought up the other day yeah because of, I think it was a John Cohen quote about, well, if we had a healthier kicker, we'd have been in a better spot last
Oklahoma
year.
Oklahoma strikes me as a game where you maybe manage things differently if you're making your field goals.
It might have had an impact. But again, like,
I know what you mean.
My whole thought process on red zone trips is, like, you get across, you get inside the 20, you got to be scoring touchdowns. And if you kick a field goal, that is like a, okay, you know, that should be the last resort. It shouldn't be. Kicking field goals in the red zone shouldn't be ever considered a success. It is a consolation prize.
So it's a win for the defense.
It's a consolation prize.
If you got first and 10 in the red zone as an offense,
yeah,
and you end up kicking, if you end up attempting a
and
field
if you're
goal,
that defense, yeah, you think, heck yeah, that's yeah great.
You feel like you have.
Bend don't break. I mean, that's, again, in modern football. So my thing with Auburn is.
Now, missing too many of them can add up. I think there is a,
sure,
there is a flip
side. There was not one game last season where you said, well, if Auburn hit all their field goals, they'd have won. Yep. There isn't one. There just isn't. Like, you know, game may have gone differently,
sure,
but it wouldn't have flipped around. It's just
you can't just add the totals of the miss. Right. Yeah, there's not
you,
one.
You have
the math adds up like that.
You have, you know, opportunities when you get inside the 20. You've got to put the ball in the end zone. And last season, Auburn just didn't do that. And so, yes, it was bad that they missed field goals, but it's bad that they even had to line up for the field goals that many times. The red zone touchdown percentage is pretty bad, because the only team that's been worse than that in the past decade was a team that didn't win a single conference game. That's how bad they were in SEC play.
Made a coaching change, or that was maybe the year.
I think that was.
Or that might have been early in the. That might have been early in the tenure. I forget. I forget when Butch went 0-8.
It's just a bad spot to be in, because that's an area where you can say, you know, if a few of those drives end in touchdowns, that's what gets you to the 6, 7, and 8 wins, more so than like pinning it all on the fact that, you know, Alex McPherson had a sickness that kept him like. Yes, it would have been better for Auburn to hit field goals last season, but that's not winning you games. What's winning you games is getting to the red zone and being ruthless and scoring. And that's that killer instinct. That's that winning edge that we have not seen Auburn's offense have in the last couple of seasons.
Even if you have a high percentage field goal kicker, settling for field goals in the red zone
yeah
is settling. It's not, and it's and that was true.
It's good if your kicker, like for a kicker, I want my kicker to be automatic on extra points and the short ones. But like, where the real value in a kicker is, can they hit the 45 and 50 yarders where it's like, man, we're kind of in no man's land, but we're going to come out with some points.
And I would have said that point about, you know, just converting when you get to the red zone. that would have been a loftier goal when you didn't feel like you had excellent skill position players. Now that you have guys that profile as red zone threats, multiple players that way, one would think, then obviously I think you can aim a little bit higher as far as needing to.
I think, and I think that ties back into quarterback play, because I think you had red zone threats last year. I mean, Keandre Lambert-Smith was one of the best receivers in the country in terms of his efficiency. You just didn't do enough. Cam Coleman did well. He just didn't do enough. Jarquez Hunter couldn't score touchdowns. Like, you just – quarterback play and offensive line play is going to go a long way in this one. And, again, tying back that back in, this is that is the area, especially the quarterback part, that is the area – it's a huge reason why Hugh Freeze was hired to be the head coach, and that's where the pressure is on to – get those wins that can turn this recruiting around.
That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. I'm Dan Peck. You are listening to The Drive. Stick around.
The Drive. Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, auburnobserver.com. Drew at the controls. He's our Ringo. He's our rhythm section, although we're more of a three-piece band today. Justin, some favorite all-time favorite three-piece groups that the, you can, you know, any, favorite, any trios? Okay, interesting. Blink.
Cat Gas.
Not a Blink guy? Okay. The Police, love the Police. Anyways, yeah, that's what we're doing today. So, you can call the show 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Justin Ferguson is a Braves season ticket holder. You will be attending All-Star festivities next month as well, while you pop into Atlanta for SEC Media Days. Maybe we hit up Heirloom. You never know. We had some.
Are you going to be there all week?
I think I will be there. I think I'm getting in Sunday night, and I'm rolling into a town Sunday night and staying until they throw us out.
Yeah.
At the customary flickering of the lights during the Thursday edition of The Drive at SEC Media Days, because they desperately want. They desperately want Radio Row cleared out by then, and we're usually ultimo hombres there at Media Days, the last ones, and we'll be covering that extensively. Mention the Braves. They've been playing well of late. Some exciting developments. For the team. Where are you on? Let's do a little thermometry with you and the Braves.
Well, I mean,
using that word a lot more. It sounds like something Dusty Rhodes would say.
Yeah.
Right.
Dating back to the start of the Brewers series, they won the Brewers series, two out of three from the Brewers, two out of three from the Rockies, swept the Mets, lost to...
Brewers and Mets, two of the better teams in the National League.
Yeah, lost two out of three to the Marlins.
Less so the Rockies.
Lost two out of three to the Marlins this weekend, which was disappointing, but last night picked up a big win over the Mets, got off to a 3-0 lead and had to hang on for dear life. Dylan Lee had one of the craziest, like, clutch strikeouts I've seen of Juan Soto in a tight situation. And so, you know, I feel like if you're Atlanta, you come out of this if you can at least split, which all you need to do is pick up one more. It's a 4-game set in the Mets, you're all right. If you can win this series in New York, and I know the Mets are scuffling right now, I mean, you're talking about a stretch here where you've been playing decently above 500 baseball in a stretch where you've had to turn it around. You get the Phillies this week, and the Phillies are playing really, really well. But I mean, for the Braves, it's all really changed with Acuña coming back, and he hit another homer last night.
His pace is crazy.
He's batting over 400.
The 162 game like stats. If you do what he's done since returning. It's hilarious. It's, you know, say 60 homers, 200 runs. It's madness.
Yeah, and right now they are.
It's a small sample size, but not that small.
That's not terribly small.
It's like,
they're back to 5 games below 500. They had fallen right all the way down. I think they were 10 games below 500 at one point. When it got the worst, and you know, they crawled back up and they slid back down.
I wouldn't be shocked if they were one of the three best teams in the National League from the start, from the end of the All-Star break to the end of the season. I think they're
going to need to be. They're six games out of the wild card race right now, which is still striking distance in baseball.
What's the word on Sale?
Snuggett. They think he will pitch again this season, but they don't know when.
Okay.
Because
I made a move for the 20-year-old the prospect in the
Fuentes. He's gonna have to start. He's gonna have to be a starter now with Sale on the shelf. He pitched well the other night. He may have one really bad mistake, and it really hurt him. But that
youngest player in baseball to appear in a game this season, major leaguer, and the youngest.
I mean, he was only 2 days after. It was only 2 days after his 20th birthday.
Yeah, he'd been 20 for 48 hours when he got the call to go to start the game this week for the Braves, and he, I believe, it's the youngest Brave to either start a game at pitcher or appear in a game since the early 70s. It's been a while since the Braves.
AJ came up when he was 20, but I think he had been solidly 20 at that point.
I believe Francoeur was also really young when he made his made his debut with the Braves. But it's been a while since they've gone with anyone, and he's someone who's sort of rocketed through the system. This time last year didn't seem like Fuentes was about to start major league games, but he's had a fantastic last few months, and Braves could have a guy who's been 20 for a week as a starter in the rotation for a little while.
Yeah, Braves have won 7 of their last 10. The only teams in the National League that have done that to this point are the Brewers, who you took a bunch from, the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and the Phillies. So it's good company to keep. Six games back in the wild card race, which is still striking distance, like I said. I'm very interested to see if the Reds are for real and if they can continue. They're above 500. Can they keep that pace up? I have a feeling the Diamondbacks are about to start falling off a cliff.
Well, if their best players keep getting hit in the hand with pitches, then, that's crazy. Corbin Carroll, who broke a bone in his wrist, and that's a horrible injury for a guy who was playing like a top three National League outfielder this year. And then Suarez last night, seems like Suarez isn't going to miss too much time, but to lose two of your best hitters, happened to the Dodgers last year with Mookie and who was the other one? Maybe Muncy. But two guys took pitches off the wrist or the hand in very short proximity to one another, and not intentional, it's just baseball. It can be a real setback. That can be a season changing setback if the wrong guy takes one off the hand or the wrist, especially the power hand, Mookie Betts has been a different hitter since coming back from last year's injury to the wrist and the hand. So it can be significant. And I think I agree with you about the Diamondbacks. You're bullish on Strider again right after the last couple.
He's looking good. He pitches again tonight. His last couple of starts, he's been back in the high 90s. He's been spotting that slider better. His first couple of starts coming back from this injury, it looked like, oh boy, he might be cooked. I believe the other day his start, he had his first three pitches were 99, 98, 99. Just actually pumping it again, and if he's sitting in those high 90s, he can work off that slider a lot better and spot it. It makes a big difference. You're in a good spot right now if you're Atlanta with the way Acuna's been raking. Matt Olson's in a pretty good hot streak right now. Riley's had a solid run.
I forget if this was your idea, but if Olson isn't an All-Star, hopefully he's in the Derby.
It'd be an incredible Derby pick.
Yeah, obviously, need to have somebody from the Braves.
I don't know if he's going to be in the Derby, but have you seen what Cal Raleigh's been doing?
Yeah,
in Seattle, it's insane. He had 32 homers.
I may have in the mixed league where I was prepping for one of the Troy WNIT games, and so I was in and out of the draft while I had other things going on, and the league drafted Cal Riley for me, and I was like, oh, that's not, but it also took Will Smith, and rosters are kind of small in that league, so I had to make a judgment call first week of the season, and I'm not cutting Will Smith. So I didn't think the other guy was going to turn into Mark McGwire from 1998 or something. But it's absolute madness what what the dump is doing up in Seattle. You mentioned the Reds. Really exciting day for them with Chase Burns, number two pick in last year's draft, making his debut. Did you realize Chase Burns is going to become, we mentioned on yesterday's show, Chase Burns is going to be the eighth player from the 2022 Tennessee Vols to appear in a major league game.
Yeah.
Like already, including Seth Halverson, who looks like he's the Rockies closer. Trey Lipscomb has played in and out for the Nationals at third base. Several noteworthy major leaguers
already from that team. Christian Moore. Christian Moore was on that team. Louder
was in Tennessee, but he's a Red. But there's they've had
Dollander,
Beck. Jordan Beck, the Rockies.
Who's the big joker, was Ben Joyce on that team?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think Ben Joyce was on that team. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty shocking.
It's all sad that last week it was like six guys who were drafted last year hit home runs in the majors last week. It's crazy.
It's happening. And my unscientific theory there is that this is just like the super teams we saw in men's basketball this past year. This is a product of guys finishing their careers like never before in college athletics.
College baseball being as competitive as it's been, yeah.
Like now guys that would have left after 3 years, or even guys that would have eschewed college baseball at the D1 level completely, and they would have played a year of junior college ball in like Northwest Florida, and then they would have gone in the draft then.
Yeah.
Like, because they wanted to get into a major league system as quickly as possible. Now, look, 4 years at an SEC school or 4 years at the D1 level.
Four years at a really good school, you might be in the majors next year.
And it may not be the same school for 4 years. You could start somewhere at the mid-major level in D1. And I mean, Paul Skeens was at Air Force. Like, I mean, you can start. I mean, look, I think that, and this isn't the best example because it sounds like he's set. But if that Coastal catcher wanted to play one more year of college baseball, it sounds like he's a first-round pick in a lot of folks' eyes, Bodine. But he would be a starter practically anywhere. A Buster Posey Award winner, the Rawlings, the Gold Glove Award winner, Buster Posey finalist. Like, this guy's a monster. Sounds like he's going to be able to go straight from Coastal to the first round of the NFL draft. But if he wanted to stop and play a year of college baseball, I mean, there would be a buyer's market for what he does, and he's just one example of stuff like that. And I mean, yeah, and I think that also leads to you're seeing guys make the jump from college baseball to the pros faster, and you can have a team like the 2022 Tennessee Volunteers, who again, that's I mean, we are 3 years, the 2022 Major League Baseball draft was almost exactly 3 years ago, and you're talking about eight guys from one program who have already made the jump from college to the pro. I mean, it's really, really impressive. And so, yeah, hopefully Chase Burns can add to that list of exciting young starters in Major League Baseball with a quality appearance tonight for the Reds in his debut. We'll be back with more. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson, Drew at the controls. This is The Drive.
Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out. Drew at the controls. In case folks are wondering, we've had Tuesday visits from Andy Burcham throughout football and men's basketball and baseball season. Giving Andy a couple of weeks off. We will probably catch up with him again at SEC Media Days next month in Atlanta, and then certainly when we get closer to the start of football season in August and the return of Tiger Talk, which you can catch on Wings 94.3. I'm a company man, so you can always catch Auburn University Athletics, including Tiger Talk, on Wings 94.3. We'll start catching up with Andy more often, maybe on Tuesdays. You know, I don't want to offer guarantees or anything, but really appreciative of the time that Andy Burcham has given us all season long. Always fun to catch up with him. I think some of the best stuff we do is during our conversations with Andy and yeah, really thankful. And Justin, you know, rope you in on this too. Also, just a phenomenal season by Andy Burcham. The work he did and was ready for a historic men's basketball season, and I thought brought it.
Oh, yeah.
Every single time out and met the moment.
Yeah, 100%. And then to follow that up with the what baseball just did as well, a fantastic season for them. Yeah, I mean, it's just great season, obviously, from Andy. And, you know, they'll be right back at it, you know, here in a couple months.
And you were right there at every – did you miss a game? Were you at every
men's basketball game that counted.
You skipped the Furman exhibition.
I went there because I was still in Kentucky.
I think it was the day after a football game.
Yeah, but at UK, yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, you attended
all of them,
including you crossed oceans to watch this team, and now Auburn turning the page to next season, and Janiah Broome later this week finding out where he's headed in the
forgot the draft was not all on the same night anymore.
They've turned
the second rounds off by itself.
I remember
that was last year,
and this is this is a basketball segment, but I do remember we talked about it a little bit during the NFL draft when the NFL draft was a Saturday when the first round of the NFL draft was like a 4.5 hour, 5 hour Saturday afternoon affair. And like, I think teams had 15 or 20 minutes to make selections. Like, there was no urgency at all in the first round. So I think they knew that there were deals and there was,
yeah.
I think, I believe that previous CBAs made negotiating with rookies tougher. That wasn't as cookie cutter as far as the now I think it's pretty cut and dry. Oh, you were taken here. This is your. It's a little bit like the baseball draft with an amount of money you're expected to take. There was more discrepancy with rookies and holdouts and things like that. So there was negotiating going on. But the NFL pretty quickly turned that into, all right, we're going to reduce the amount of time that each team has, and turn the first round into something that could potentially move from Saturday to Thursday night in primetime. And sure enough, once they got that first round down to 2 hours, 3 hours, it became a more, you know, the thought of making it a more palatable, like TV spectacular, you know, turned it into what the NFL draft has become now, where it looks like, you know, it looks like Woodstock, you know, and, you know, when they take it on the road to different cities. The NBA draft, and I forget how long they've done the first round on a separate night.
Like I said, last year.
Yeah. I forget. I know they talked about it for a long time.
Yeah.
They're gonna try to capture some of that tomorrow. I know it's also being simulcast on ABC along with ESPN. Now the first round has its own night, and it's unlikely that you hear an Auburn name called.
I think you're gonna only hear one Auburn name called. Period, and it'll be on Friday night or Thursday night. Sorry.
And you made some points about sort of how the NBA may view Janai, and I asked you sort of like how Janai would need to, if Janai needs to evolve his game, and if so, how, if he's going to fit with an NBA organization.
I just think he's going to have to prove that he is strong enough on both ends of the floor to play the five, because I don't know if he has the athleticism to play the four at the NBA level long term. You know, it's tough. You have guys that, you know, you have teams that run a lot of small ball fours, and it's like, does he can get out there on the perimeter, but he's not necessarily a guy who wants to live out there on the perimeter defensively. But at 6'9", 6'10", can he be a guy that consistently plays that kind of center role really well? Because that's where he's at his best on offense, and is where he's at his best on defense. Can he just do that in the NBA where he is not an elite athlete?
A lot of guys that came into the league as prototype threes, like LeBron Kevin Durant, like there are guys.
They're fours now.
Yeah, they're fours, and that's what you have to figure out.
And your threes are now twos. Yeah.
Yeah, and for
twos are now threes.
And I think there was an attempt to sort of marry some of what a modern NBA four needs with Janai's game. Like,
I mean, the fact that he can the fact that he can distribute and put the ball on the deck and be a good playmaker and occasionally hit outside shots is good. Like that is something, you know, that a modern four can do. It's just I think a lot of the stuff that comes with like lateral quickness and being able to move in space, what fours do is going to be, you know, it's a big question. You know, like you take, for example, this past, you know, NBA finals, Dan, like you look at the guys who started at the four in the playoffs, this past finals, like do you know if he's ready to, you know, if he's a guy that's going to be ready to roll there? Like, can he play that position? And it's
tough.
It's a tough question.
What about real quick? Because we got to take
by
the break.
Is Jani Broom guarding like the type of player like a Chet Holmgren or a Pascal Siakam?
Yeah,
and it's those are very agile, stretchy guys. And then you know the Pacers and the Thunder were both big teams with their starting lines.
Do they run Jalen at the three? Is it Jalen Dort?
They would start. Yeah, it would be Shai, Dort, Jay Will. Chet and Hartenstein was starting at center
field. I remember watching Dort at Arizona State, and just a brick factory offensively, but an unbelievable defender. Like even in college, and it's like, can you go to the NBA doing that? And sure enough, you can start for one of the.
You just got to be able to shoot enough. That's what got that's what got Tony Allen ran out of the league,
and Dort's gotten better every year.
Yeah,
still. I think there's still an element of like late Artest where he'll get the ball and be open for three and the fans do not want him to shoot it. But sometimes it goes in, like even in that situation. Real quick, Dylan, there's the possibility that an NBA team kicks the tires on Dylan Caldwell.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see.
Probably not as a draft pick.
But yeah, I would be interested to see if somebody thinks of him like at the end of the second round. But like, no, I think he's a UDFA – summer league team guy right off the bat, and you know, he is what he does well fits with an NBA. We talk about what Janai does well and how that's not quite as modern. You know, Dylan Carwell, for the guy who has a lack of a well-rounded offensive skill set, the fact that he rim runs, he blocks shots, he rebounds, he screens, and moves well for a guy his size, all that plays in the NBA. It's just a matter of can that play well enough to overcome his shortcomings and make an NBA roster? It could. It very well could. I'll say this. You see more Dylan Cardwells in the NBA, like in terms of skill, like style and skill set. You see more Dylan Cardwells in the NBA now than you do Janai Brooms. Janai Broom is a better player, and that's why he's going to get drafted, and Dylan Cardwell's not on the immediate draft radar. But stylistically, I think what's going to give – him, it would be different. Like if Dylan Carwell played like Janai Broom, it'd be really tough for him to get in the league. But I think, you know, the fact that he has that modern five really can help him out a lot.
We gotta take a break. We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive.
The Drive, ESPN 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Justin, tell folks about the Auburn Observer and where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can go to auburnobserver.com, check it out. Newsletter came out earlier this week on Malcolm Simmons and some fun stats there. And I just think he's not getting enough preseason love considering what all he was able to do last season for the Tigers. Had the podcast out today that we talked about earlier. Tomorrow, got a column on Janai Broom, Tahad Pettiford, Auburn in the NBA draft, just kind of the situation they find themselves in after the best season in program history. Mailbag out on Thursday. Dan and I are going to take a break from the podcast for the next couple of slots. We'll be back later next week just because of some, you know, travel and stuff going on over the extended weekend.
And I have to narrow down my top 10 movies of, of the 21st century list. And so,
but we will continue. We will have newsletters and all that next week, and bring back the podcast later next week. So good time, auburnobserver.com.
And July, always a fun time for the Observer too, because we can, you know, who knows?
Yeah, we didn't get a we didn't get an ambush event this week, but I think there's one still on the cards for next week at Lake Martin. And then you've got you know, media days coming up, and you know, hitting the stride of getting stuff ready for preview season, and then we'll roll right into fall camp.
Yeah, check back in with some of our favorite guests and things like that, and then of course football season, you know, could be here very, very soon. Not that many Saturdays left before you're talking about the first season. The first games of the season. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. 334-564-1840. The Drive Text Box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. More of the Drive coming up. Stick around.
Reynolds Outdoors, they're all about hunting and fishing.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I have almost called it Friday a couple of times, Justin, just because.
Not even close.
Not even remotely close to Friday.
It's only the second day of the week.
That's right. It was in fact, we're the next Friday is just a little bit closer than the previous Friday was. And that and wasn't
it's so, not a good sign.
Yeah, so it's not Friday. But you're in the house. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, the CEO, the founder, the boss, is here hanging out with us, the Continental Champion of the Auburn Observer, and he was telling folks, I mean, look, we've got exciting stuff coming up at the Observer over the next couple of months, and you had some folks take advantage of your grads, your annual grads and grads and dads, Auburn graduation promotion.
You can still check out the website right now on a free trial if you want to check that out for a week, no money, just, you know, hang out and see if it's for you or not.
I'll tell you something else. If you know someone who is about to start their Auburn University career, someone who's about to begin as an Auburn student or grad student,
if they're coming in this fall, let me know.
Or if that describes you, reach out to Justin Ferguson, because he can, he's happy to welcome you into the family at a very reasonable. Very reasonable price, and auburnobserver.com, a great way to stay up to date on what's going on during the off season, and of course when we get rolling in just a couple of weeks with some football games. Justin will be there in Waco. It'll be, you know what, we're about a week away. Crazy to think, we're about a week away from being able to say you'll be in Waco next month for Auburn football, because we're rapidly approaching the end of June. And I said this earlier in the summer that once media days is over, the time between, and it felt like this as a student, but it also feels like this in the postgraduate era, which is what I'm choosing to call this, the time between, I mean, and it's also because you can sort of see this, you know, the sands in the hourglass running out on summer, and the fall's about to start again. But that time between the end of, you know, the end of media days, the middle of July, and that and the first couple of and the first few weekends of football, that flies by. That is I mean it I remember last year, you know, opening weekend, thinking like we were just in Texas for media days not all that long ago, and sure enough, you know, I think that's, we're sort of at that breakneck pace again. It helps when football and when men's basketball and baseball are as relevant as they are too, Justin. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm sure you probably remember the off-season drought.
Oh, yeah.
When there was when football would end in December, January, you had some recruiting news, and then there was very little to talk about as far as Auburn competing for SEC championships in different sports or looking relevant nationally in different sports. And it's different now, and now you've got a football team hoping to join the basketball team, the men's basketball team, and the baseball team in national relevance in their own right.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. You know, you get that. You don't really get a lull, and when you do get a lull, you have enough stuff that you can kind of always look back and look forward on. So it is a good time for sure. It used to be, yeah, you just kind of scraping, and even if you are scraping around, it's always a good time to take a little break too.
Exciting stuff though with football season just around the corner, and love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Meant to mention this earlier in the show, Jake Crane is traveling later in the week and could not make it today, but we will get Jake when he returns from his summer vacation. So we will have an update with Jake Crane again soon. But Justin Ferguson in the house for the entire show. Bill Cameron is seeing Ringo Starr tonight in concert, and he will have a full recap of Ringo and the rest of the All-Star Band when he returns to the Drive. This hour of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. NBA draft tomorrow night. We will have coverage of that on ESPN 106.7. ESPN Radio's draft coverage. I believe we will we'll be carrying that following the Drive tomorrow night. And you know, Auburn saw an unusually high number of these. I mean, it helps when Duke's going to have probably three of the top six or seven guys off the board. But these are all names that you got to see in person, Justin. Seeing mm-hmm. this basketball team. I've never really asked you. Like, are you as sold as everyone else on Cooper Flagg?
Yes.
Like, do you feel like this is a
yeah? No, he can do pretty much everything on the floor. There's not a part of his game that you feel like there's a hole in it. He's a great all around player. He's got great size, great athleticism, very explosive, a lot more explosive than I think people give him credit for. I mean, he's a total package.
There aren't that many. I mean, look, in football too. I mean, I guess there are more of them in football, especially when you get away from the quarterback position. But there just aren't that many sure things in football or men's basketball as far as the pro draft. Cooper Flagg feels as close to a sure thing. I said it yesterday on the show. We were talking about Andrew Luck, like quarterbacks that we liked that weren't necessarily playing for our team. And Andrew Luck was as certain as I've ever been that a quarterback in college was going to be good in the NFL. Like, watching him in college, I thought he was as close to a sure thing as I've ever seen as far as a guy making the jump from the college game to the NFL game. Cooper Flagg, he seems like, and stop me if you disagree here, Justin,
mm-hmm.
Cooper Flagg seems like one of the sure things
yep.
to come along in the last, you know, in the last few drafts, and maybe longer than that. When you think about, I mean, there are guys taken first overall who were, and this isn't revisionist history, like there are guys taken first overall didn't pan out that were not sure things even on draft night.
No.
And I mean,
last year was one of the worst drafts, like in terms of quality wise in a while. Let's see. I mean, Wemby in 23 was about as sure of a thing as you were going to get because he was just a freak show.
LeBron, I guess, you know, you're going back a while, but you know, folks loved Kyrie.
Yeah, I'm looking through, like, okay, so the 22 draft was Banchero, but there was talk about, okay, you take Chet, you take Jabari at one. Banchero ended up being the pick and ended up being a really good one. Cade was 21, and that one felt iffy. Anthony Edwards is a pretty good one. 19 Zion, I think, was a sure thing. Ayton, I remember that Ayton debate in 2018, if he was worth
it. Totally forgot about Ayton. Totally forgot DeAndre Ayton, who was coached by new Texas men's basketball coach Sean Miller back in Arizona.
That draft, obviously, if they could go back and do it all over again, I think it would look a lot different. Ayton 1, Marvin Bagley 2, Luka 3. And, of course, that's the trade that the Hawks make at 3, and they end up getting Trae Young out of it at 5.
Yeah, Trae Young and Luka.
Shea goes 11th in that draft.
Mentioned it yesterday. Shea only the fourth guy ever to win the Triple Crown of – do you know what I'm about to say?
Yeah.
Scoring title, MVP, and Finals MVP.
Yep.
The
other ones Kareem, were Kareem, Jordan,
and Shaq.
Kareem,
Jordan, and Shaq. And so it's been 20 something years since Shaq did it.
I'm looking through.
It was the first Lakers title.
Looking through here. Like 17 was Markelle Fultz. So yeah, you'd probably take that. That one.
Is that the Tatum draft?
That is Fultz, Ball 1 and 2. Yep. Followed by Tatum at 3, Josh Jackson at 4, De'Aaron Fox at 5.
There were Tatum. I lived in
Donovan Mitchell goes 13 in that draft. Bam Adebayo goes 14 in that draft.
You think about how things are different if the Lakers go Tatum instead of Ball at 2, because that's a there were people pushing for Tatum over Lonzo. There were Lonzo fans in L.A. too after the season he had at UCLA, but. But no, you think about how things can be different if
I'm going back. 16 was Ben Simmons. I mean, Ben Simmons was the consensus guy then, but I think I'd rather have Cooper Flagg.
And I think there were people raising concerns.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram and Jaylen Brown is 2 and 3 in that class. And then Cat in 2015, which I think was a pretty easy call to make there.
Jaylen Brown and Tatum is probably best case scenario if you're going to take two players back to back 3 in the NBA draft. Like, I wonder if that's ever gone better for a team as far as, like, if you're taking two players back in back-to-back years with the third overall pick. Like,
oh, yeah.
You come away with Jason – yeah. You come away with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and you've seen them be pretty good.
2014 was Andrew Wiggins. I feel like Flagg would have been a better move there.
Certainly.
The one that hurts me in that one, Jabari Parker, too. I love Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
Didn't work out there. Joel Embiid was 3rd. You had Julius Randle at 7th. Zach LaVine, 13th. And then that draft is famously 41st, Nikola Jokic.
Nikola Jokic during the Taco Bell commercial.
Taco Bell commercial, which I reference in tomorrow's column.
I would think
the big quesarito.
Embiid would be the if you had to redo it. You know, it's
if you had to redo it, it would be Embiid for sure. Jokic.
Sorry, if you're redoing the lottery, then if you're redoing it,
you're going to be like, hey, that guy they got in the mid-second round is going to end up being the best player in the world. Yeah.
And, you know, and what's crazy is Embiid's going to be really good at his best, like really, really good. And it's just there's also going to be a guy in the second round who's, going to be an MVP.
And then I always go back to the 2013 draft, the year before. That's the Anthony Bennett draft.
Yep.
Real rough. Victor Oladipo at 2 was not bad, right?
Right.
Considering the rest of that top 10 was Otto Porter Jr., Cody Zeller, Alex Lynn, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Trey Burke, and CJ McCollum. Michael Carter Williams won Rookie of the Year in that class at 11th and then promptly fell off a cliff. That draft, though, Steven Adams at 12, Kelly Olynyk 13, Shabazz Muhammad at 14, and at number 15, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I love Shabazz. Yep. I thought Shabazz was just tough to be.
Rudy Gobert, 27th in that class.
Tough to be a guy that size with zero interest in shooting threes.
Just nope.
Like a power. Well, that was the thing
about
guard.
That was the thing about Michael. Yeah, Michael Carter Williams was kind of the same way. It was like a really good player, and he had a great rookie season. But it was also like, man, you're gonna have to hit a jumper if you're gonna stick in the league, and he did not.
What's Kid Gilchrist? Is that in the same? Is that maybe? Is that Anthony? Is that the Anthony Davis draft? Maybe they go 1-2.
Yes.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
The year before is Michael Kidd Gilchrist at 2. Anthony Davis at 1, Brad Beal at 3. This one's got to hurt. 4, the Cavs take Dion Waiters.
Okay.
5, the Kings take Thomas Robinson. And that sucks because at 6, the Trailblazers got Damian Lillard.
Damian Lillard, yep. Lillard, who breaks Steve Nash's leg in his first NBA game when they bump knees for a play. I believe Nash's Lakers debut bumps knees with Lillard. And
strong second round that year. That is the Draymond Green Chris Middleton second round.
Hey now, yeah. Okay, a couple of perennial All Stars popping out of the second round. But Kid Gilchrist comes to mind when I think about some of your wackier jump shots.
It was like Michael Kid Gilchrist was like he does everything you would want from a wing well except for shoot the ball.
Yeah,
it's like crazy length, absurd athleticism. You know, could be a defensive monster.
Battier with no range.
Yeah,
it was like
different kind of circumstances, but it's like if Kawhi didn't have a jumper, like that was kind of the feel there.
So we talked, we remembered some guys from previous year's NBA drafts, and this conversation sort of started with the idea that Cooper Flagg is something of a sure thing. Looking beyond Cooper Flagg, a lot of SEC players, a lot of SEC freshmen in the mix to be in the lottery. I think that if your team can't get Cooper Flagg, I would think a lottery, if you're picking right now.
It's a good lottery.
Yeah, and I think if you come away with either Jeremiah Fears or Trey Johnson, all things considered, that's...
Oh, shoot, I think Dylan Harper's number two.
No, Dylan Harper's going two, but I think if your team can't get Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper's going to go two to the Spurs, you're right. After those two, if your team comes away with Fears or Johnson, I feel like they did pretty well. Like I would think that those are both guys who, you know, it's a dice roll, but they seem to have everything that a perimeter contributor would maybe need in the NBA.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know,
do you have a strong opinion about one or the other as pros?
I like Trey Johnson.
Okay,
I watch Fears. I like Fears. I think Fears gets a little bit of a bump because of his youth. I watched Trey
Johnson. It's a young Sheldon situation.
I watched Trey Johnson, and it was just like, this dude can't, like there's not a shot on this floor that he's not going to be willing to shoot. And
I really wish he'd played another year. Economically, it doesn't make sense.
Like, no, I just wish you'd have played for a different coach or a different team.
I wish he'd played, you know what, you're right. I wish he'd played a different first year in college basketball. Because you're right, expecting him to play a second year when he's potentially a top five pick right now is not realistic.
I'm like, if you'd have kept him in the SEC, and it's like, yeah, put him at I'm trying to figure out
Tennessee.
Florida would have been, that'd have been overkill. Yeah. But Tennessee, yeah. If he was a Tennessee guy, or I don't know who was. I mean, heck, man,
Kentucky,
Missouri,
yeah. I mean, Kentucky could have used a creator off the bounce like that.
Offense wasn't Kentucky's problem.
It's true.
I didn't watch Kentucky basketball and be like, well, they need a guy who can score and is not that interested in defense.
No, I still think, I mean, we're talking
Missouri.
About,
I think Missouri would Missouri's have been a phenomenal pick for him, because I think Dennis Gates is a great coach.
You know what? South Carolina could have used him. Could have used a lot. And South Carolina looks like they've got a lottery pick in this draft. A guy you like. Again, a sort of unconventional type because he's... an undersized four who doesn't seem to shoot a ton from the outside, but Colin Murray Boyle's a good player, man, isn't he? I mean, you're driving the CMB.
Yep.
The bus.
I'm looking at Trey Johnson's recruiting rankings now, and let's see, his other visits were Alabama, Kansas, Kentucky, and Baylor. God, if he would have gone to Baylor.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, if he had gone to Baylor.
And Kansas had a talent problem, right?
Yeah.
That was a roster that...
And like in Alabama, he would have been really good. But like Alabama didn't really need... Like, man, but if Baylor, consider that Baylor team. Yep. It would have him and VJ Edgecombe, because VJ's probably going top five in this class.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would have... I mean... And with Texas, you're right. It felt very free flowing and
like AAU ball.
Yeah, it felt sort of.
You'd roll them out there and be like, I don't know what they're trying to do on offense. I don't know what they're trying to do.
And the ball didn't move.
It stuck.
That was the bigger issue to me. I mean, it just felt like it was a couple of Musselman dealt with this at times, where it's like, I don't question whether or not your best offensive players are good. but they don't seem to be playing together, and there seems to be a lot of spectating when one guy has the ball and sort of watch. And I could look, I understand why someone might spectate with Trey Johnson. Like, hey, he's got the ball. Like, let him go do his thing. But no, I mean, it didn't work enough, and I think Texas underachieved as much as just about anybody in the league, which is a big reason why there's a new coach there. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the players that could hear their names called tomorrow night in the NBA draft. And anything you want to talk about, love to hear from you on the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We will be back with more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Hi.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the boss from the Auburn Observer, Justin Ferguson, hanging out with us on a Tuesday, making the rare appearance. You mentioned, Justin, I don't know if you've I don't know if you went into detail, but you've got some cool stuff going on in the next couple of days. You're checking out a part of the country you haven't visited very much, and you got a little speaking engagement situation happening. What do you got?
I'm speaking at the Athens Auburn Club, Athens, Georgia. Their annual meeting is later this week, and if memory serves me correct, which I mean we got the confirmation earlier today, it's me and Auburn assistant coach, basketball coach Corey Williams
are going to
be
cool. There.
So they're going to let me. I think I'm opening for Corey. I think I'm opening for Corey Williams, which is like, go up there, you know, talk about football, take some Q&A, and let Corey handle the real business.
Now, I specifically said that you don't open for anyone. And when I negotiated this, but I guess with Corey, we'll, you know, the basketball coach will allow it. But that should be a lot of fun. This is your first like sort of hired speaking engagement with an Auburn club, and I'm confident it won't be your last. And I guess can we mention that if folks out there are interested in Justin Ferguson for their Auburn club, like, it's, you know,
email me,
reach out to Justin Ferguson about that. That'll be very, very exciting stuff. Mention the draft a little bit. Talked in the first hour about Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell as possible NBA as possible fits for the NBA draft. We were on Tahad watch for a really long time, and sort of like knowing now that he decided to return to college basketball, like looking back on sort of Tahad's Tahad's testing of the waters with the NBA draft, what do you think he heard about what he needs to do to play his way into serious consideration to be a top pick next year? Like, what do you suspect the takeaways were from that month or so of draft prep that Tahad Pettiford did before deciding to return to Auburn?
I think for him, I think it really just ultimately came down to, I think they're going to want to see what he does as the lead dog in this. Like, I don't think there's anything about Tahad Pettiford's game that needs to take a huge step forward. There's not like a hole that you can think of. Like, yes, you can get better at everything. I think they're going to want to see more film of him on defense and how he works there. But I think ultimately with Tahad, it's just like, what it came down to is, were enough teams willing to look at him in the first round as a 6'1" teenage point guard? And if not, it would probably better serve him financially and just for his game and his development to come back. So I think when you look at Tahad Pettiford deciding to come back, I don't think it's necessarily, hey, dude, we need to see you do this and this and this. You got to get better at this and this to be a drafted pick. I think it was the kind of more of the market and the opportunity ahead of him, and knowing that another year could show him that, like, Okay, he looked great as a six man last season. He could look excellent as a starter. And as we've talked about, you know, we were saying with this NBA draft class, you've got, you know, you've got Harper up top, and you've got Fears and Johnson, and you know, there's several point guards that Walter Clayton in that first round mix. This upcoming class, the 2026 class, right now, may only have like one or two guys that you look at as like an elite point guard. So naturally, I think a great season for Todd Pettifer could really help it stop, because I think there's going to be less competition at his position right now. I mean, he was as great as Todd Pettifer is, and he was, he wouldn't have even been, you know, he might have been the fourth best point guard out of the SEC in this draft class if he would have gone. Next year, he could be the second or third or whatever best point guard, period, in this class.
Do you think what he was hearing is a lot of the same stuff that Filon was sort of hearing, as far as sort of influencing Filon's decision to also? Because those are the two guys that were – those are the two freshmen.
I don't know.
It's just because those were the two freshmen playing for high-level SEC teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Filon, I think it was ultimately like, you know, he needed to get to a number. That's what it felt like, right? You know, when you make an literal 11th-hour decision like he did – for a guy that was not – that was the thing about Filon as well. He was not a guaranteed first-round pick, much like Tahad. They were in very similar boats. But Filon went through most of that draft process saying, I'm out. I'm staying in the draft. And then at the very end, it was such a surprise. Meanwhile, with Tahad, it was, I'm seeing my options. I'm testing the waters. But I'm coming back to Auburn if that – you know, that, I know that door is still available to me. And he didn't even publicly close it. It felt like Filon publicly closed it, but obviously when you're dealing with a player of that talent, the doors never close, especially if you can run up that money.
Talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Real quick before we move on from the NBA draft, you're bullish on Aza Newell too, right?
Yes.
Like you think that the Georgia big man.
He's a really athletic big who can rebound well. I want to see – when I watched him shoot last season, I felt like it was developing like in a good spot. I just – you know, he's just a really talented guy. He's tall. He works hard on the glass. He's a good defender. I thought the advanced stats for him were awesome last season. Very, very high-impact player. I think efficiency-wise, it was like him and – it was like Janai – and Kyle Murray Boyles and Newell were just these guys that are like every game they were playing well, and they were doing, you know, not trying to do too much. And yeah, it's easier to be good in PER and, you know, box plus minus and stuff like that when you're a big, because you're not taking as many shots and, you know, you're not turning the ball over as much naturally like a guard would. However, it's just he does his things that he does really, really well. And he's got that youth behind him. He's got that 5-star pedigree. I like him a lot. And I think where he's probably slated to go mid-first round to tomorrow night, I think a really good team that probably just made the playoffs this past season could use him and find a, like, this could be your starting five moving forward. You know, it could be a guy that in a couple of years we're talking about as a dude that's locked in as a starting center in the NBA.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I'm Dan Peck. Drew at the controls. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline presented by Skybar. Stick around. We'll be right back.
At ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
Breaking news.
The boss, what do you got?
Auburn football just got a commitment.
Ooh.
And it is not like any other commitment I've ever seen them get.
How so?
Here we go. Headline from our buddy Christian Clemente over at Auburn Undercover.
One of the greats. One of the absolute best.
Headline reads, Giant New Zealand-based offensive lineman Nakau Heppe, hoping I'm pronouncing that right, commits to Auburn. Auburn has landed a commitment from a massive offensive lineman from New Zealand, Nakau Heppe, who is listed at 6'7" and 370 pounds.
My kind of guy.
Has announced his commitment to the Tigers. He got his first offer as a recruit from Auburn earlier this year and visited for a camp this summer. Now he joins the class. Very raw, a project. He is working with, he's never played a snap of American football, but he's
NFL Academy guy, right?
He's an NFL Academy guy. Florida State, Gus Malzahn, Herb Hand have been in the mix for him.
You will see more NFL Academy and NBA Academy players in subsequent drafts moving up. And a lot, especially now they've made it easier for these guys to jump to college and come to the United States to play a little bit of college too. I mean, you mentioned Malawak in the NBA draft. I mean, he is the pride of the NBA Africa program, and you know the fact that they turned a guy who had seen basketball on YouTube, and that was pretty much it, and they were able to work with him and turn him into an effective player for Duke, and now a guy who looks like he's going to be an NBA draft prospect. Like these development programs are only getting more important and only being emphasized more, and the big fella Heppy. This is a nice pickup for Auburn and a guy with some serious. I mean, they're going to have to buy him two plane tickets to fly him over from New Zealand potentially. When you're talking or some poor sap's going to have to sit next to him flying coach, Justin.
Yeah,
like some poor guy. And I've been the guy sitting next to the poor guy on some of these Troy trips. And that's a tough break for whoever's sitting next to Mr. Heppy. But that's some serious meat that Auburn's bringing in from New Zealand.
And somebody just brought this up. I think this is a good example of the fact that scholarship limits are increasing, and so you are more willing now when you know, especially with the case where it's like this post walk on but expanded roster world, you may be more willing to take a chance on a 380-pound kid who has never played a snap of football, but you feel like you can develop him. We've talked about it in the past. Prince Tagovailoa was a guy who was very new to football when Auburn, you know, made the move for him. They've gotten guys like that over the years, and you know, you got some things you can't teach, but you feel like you can teach everything else and not have the bad habits or the past experience. It's a very literal, Dan, like a giant ball of clay that you're getting here, and it makes a lot of sense to go and take a chance on that. Knowing that, you know, you've got more freedom to do so with your roster with this new scholarship limit.
Well, I mean, I guess you use the very famous example of, like, there was, you know, the offensive lineman from the Blind Side, right? Who, like, so, there's, like...
A little different, but
Michael Orr, but again, raw to, you know, new to the sport and ends up becoming an important... We've seen international prospects, even from previous coaches, right? Like, I forget how long Killian had played organized football, right? The German offensive lineman who came to the United States and played junior college ball, Jeffrey Emba, who was just back in the recruiting trail recently, you know, for Auburn, ended up, where did he end up? SMU, is that right? With I think that's where Jeffrey Emba ended up going. But there's we've seen some international players and we've seen some domestic players who were new to football for different reasons, basketball players or just guys who grew into their football bodies. We've seen some international players who, you know, could be new to the sport for different reasons, but Auburn exploring the Aussie rules, or I guess this is rugby in this instance, and NFL Pacific, NFL Asia, providing a new commitment for Auburn from just like we were saying with Sabo, like it's not the South that we're used to talking about. Mm-hmm. Like this is a different kind of South when we're talking about someone like Nikau Heppy. 334-321-1390. Anthony is on the phone. Let's bring Anthony in. What's up, bud?
You said he's got 380 pounds.
380 pounds. Six. What did I just say? 6'7", 370. Sorry, 370.
He's been playing rugby style football in Australia.
Yes, New Zealand. Yes, sir.
Okay, Australia, New Zealand. Oh, wow. I don't know if I want to take a gamble like that. You know, that might be all right for Vandy or Mississippi State, but I don't know. You know, you got a guy that don't know the basic fundamentals of American football. I mean, pass protection and drive blocking and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I mean, it may take a while to get him developed. I don't know if you're going to have that kind of time to actually teach him the technique. Think about it. You bring a lot of linemen out of high school has been playing ball all the way from peewee ball, recreation ball, tackle football, and sometimes it takes them 2 or 3 years before they become an all-SEC player, all-American or whatnot, and give you what you're really looking for. So I don't know. That might be too big of a gamble to take.
You make a good point, though, Anthony. The offensive line is the one position in football that usually takes guys the longest to get going at the college level. And you're right. You're starting from a further back spot. I think, you know, I think it's one of those things where they're just kind of looking at the stuff that is inherent with him and saying, okay, if we can teach him the rules, if we can teach him the fundamentals, we can get him to where, you know, we get him where he can be a valuable player. But you're right. It is a risk. It is a gamble. It is not – it is very, very far from a sure thing. But like I said earlier, like I think it might be the fact that, you know, with this new scholarship, you know, with scholarships being expanded now that you're not having to stick to that 85 count, you may be a little more willing to do that. But, yeah, you're right. Like, you got to have time to make a kid like this turn into somebody at the SEC level.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Anthony. I don't disagree at all with your – hesitations, you know, about what could
for
go
sure.
wrong.
Those are all good points.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Right.
I do understand why, you know, you want to be ahead of the curve on something like this, though. And if you think this guy has the tools and just needs a lot, I mean, we've seen, like we were just saying, we've seen this administration willing to go, like Rivaldo Fairweather hadn't played that much college, you know, hadn't played that much football. He came over from basketball and ended up being a starting tight end for 2 years. Kieron Crawford is a defensive end on the team.
But he had played some, though, right?
They played some, but they jumped into – I think they both started playing high school football very late in their careers because they've been basketball. This is different because this guy has not played a snap
played
of American
all.
Football.
He
no, no, he is. So Christian Clemente, we were just talking about the from Auburn Undercover. I'll read you a little bit of his article about Heppy. Heppy has never played a snap of American football, joined the NFL Academy that works with international players to get them recruited by colleges. After a highlight tape of him working out and running through football drills was put together, Auburn offered him. Florida State was another school that was intrigued and made an offer for this guy. And he's, I mean, apparently, you know, he started seriously preparing for college football in the last 6 to 9 months. And I think it's just the idea that the underlying tools, the athleticism, and, you know, as Coach Don Dunn, if he were sitting in this room, he would tell you, you can't teach 6'7", 370, right? So you can't teach a guy to get especially the right 6'7", 370. You know, you can't necessarily teach that to a guy, and if that guy has it and he just needs the right development, maybe you could find yourself, you know, a jewel, you know, where nobody else was looking.
Well, let me ask you something. Well, can they loan him out to a junior college for a couple of years?
He could pursue junior college, and my guess would be if he came to Auburn and he was really far away and sort of redshirted. You know, if he needed to get on the field and play somewhere, you know, he might make that decision. Auburn might make that decision sort of independently. Or, you know, after a year, because he seems like, I mean, when you're talking about a guy that just started playing in the last year, you would think, okay, probably a redshirt candidate his first year, you know, probably redshirting right. And learning the speed of the game and stuff. And then I think after the redshirt year, you would assess how close is he to being a guy you can put on the field. And if there's a huge distance, then yeah, maybe he needs to go get on the field somewhere else and play his way to an SEC level. But maybe he's ready sooner than you think, and you've got a lottery ticket that cost $1 and he's worth a lot more than that a little bit later on.
That'd be a jackpot for real. But guys, I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Anthony. No, great points.
All right.
And a fair you know, I think fair questions about, you know, pursuing an international player who's relatively new to the sport, as opposed to, as Anthony said, you know, guys who have been playing this sport for a really long time. Some coaches will tell you, though, if you got two guys that are, I'm paraphrasing a story I was told a long time ago, but bear with me. Two guys are relatively similar in height and weight and skill level, and one of them has been playing the sport for 6 years, and one of them has been playing the sport for 6 months, and they're the same age, who would you rather have as the coach? I think the coach would rather have the guy who's only been playing for 6 months, because imagine what he can do with more experience and more development and more polish. The guy who's been playing the sport for 6 years maybe is closer to maximize, you know, maybe he's closer to having peaked. You know, that would be I think the view of why you would take a guy with that kind of height and weight and build, and you know, he's still so new to the sport. And we'll see if it pays off. Like we said, Anthony, if it hits, you know, that's a jackpot. That's something that didn't cost very much.
No.
And if you find your offensive tackle of the future, you find a guy who can help you on the field that way, you know, you went and found yourself an incredible bargain and something that could be unbelievably valuable down the line.
Yeah, and again, I think Anthony's points about, you know, the nature of the offensive line position are a really good one. And I think that's why you see some of these gambles pay off, and you see some that you never hear from him again.
He raised the possibility, just not to step out for a sec, but Anthony raised the possibility that could this guy maybe need to play, could he get to Auburn and you find out maybe he needs to play at a smaller level and acquaint himself with football that way, a guy like this, maybe he comes in, I would think, obvious redshirt candidate when he's this new to football.
Oh, yeah.
You redshirt him. After that first year, you assess where he is and how close is he to being able to contribute. And if he's very close, then you found yourself maybe something special.
Or if he's a kid who's just willing to continue to take the time, and the coaching staff's willing to continue to take the time with him.
Sure. But maybe he's far enough away, or what he needs is live rounds, and it's like, okay, that may need to involve a junior college, or that may need to involve a mid major or something where he can get some real playing time, and then he'll have to reassess, you know, how to get back in the SEC that way. But I think Auburn, I think it's relatively low risk, and yeah, it may not pan out, but if it pans out, you know, a jackpot, you know, is an accurate way to describe it. 334-321-1390, the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. Great stuff from Anthony. We'll be back with more. In fact, we'll be back to wrap things up as we are coming up on the end of the show. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson in the studio, Drew at the controls. This is The Drive.
Dr. Mills and
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Final few minutes of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls. Appreciate everybody listening. I hope you enjoyed a free-flowing conversation. If you liked today's edition of The Drive, have we got the podcast for you, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Justin?
Yeah, if you want more of the topics we discussed today, plus, what did we do? We did best dunks in recent Auburn basketball
favorite
memory.
Favorite quarterbacks?
Favorite non-Auburn quarterbacks. Sure. We did 21st century movies.
Drew, you got a favorite quarterback who didn't play for a team you root for? Like guys that come to mind where it's like, yeah, he was never on my team, but I always really liked that guy. Andrew Luck was one of the ones that I landed on. Michael Vick.
Michael Vick's a great answer.
Yeah.
But I guess he did play for the Steelers.
Depends on. Not in the era. Vick in the era you were
talking
about.
You're talking Falcons
era
Vick. On the Steelers. Oh, or even Eagles era Vick. We'll take Eagles era Vick as well.
But you know, the Madden superstar Michael Vick on the Steelers. AuburnObserver.com.
Michael Vick's run with the Atlanta Falcons was the closest I've ever come to becoming like an official fan of a football NFL team. Like I kind of like the Bills because of Painter, and I love watching Josh Allen play.
Another one of those stories that you just have to take my word for it is true. Like me being at the Fulton County Stadium fire, I told this on the podcast the other day, Drew. I've told this on the air, I know for sure, that I was playing Madden with a small group the weekend of the kick six and beat someone with a kick six before the game. Like I did a kick six in Madden hours before the Auburn kick six, and another one like that where you're just gonna have to you have to take my word for it, is that I took Vic in a high stakes fantasy football league Entertainment purposes only, high stakes. The reputation is the stakes. I took Vic early in a fantasy football league, came home that night, and turned on the news, and he had broken his leg in a preseason game against the Ravens. It was that season where he. I think 02 would have been his emergence as the starter, and then 03 is the year that he breaks his leg. I think that's right. Maybe I've got my years mixed up there, but it's just brutal, and I get that. Anyways, Ferguson. AuburnObserver.com, how folks can find you and all the outstanding work you do, and you'll be gearing up for the we'll be in preview mode for the next couple of weeks, and then the season will be here.
Yeah, AuburnObserver.com, check it out. We've got stories on Malcolm Simmons from earlier this week. You need to check out. Fun fact about Malcolm Simmons: third in the SEC last season in quarterback rating when targeted. So,
hey now.
One of the most efficient, and ninth in yards per route run.
I remember vividly watching, like, one of the first times I saw Malcolm Simmons in pads, and you and
it's
I
that were, open practice.
You and I were chatting at that open practice, and I'm like, this guy's at a different speed,
yep,
going in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in just the, like, it's a different level of fast just watching him go in motion pre-snap. And then you saw him actually play, and it's supersonic. So yeah. Anyways, Justin, real quick, we referenced the New York Times 10 favorite movies of the 21st century. You know, that's a big buzzy thing on social media in my circles. Is there a movie from your list that you feel like folks maybe you feel strongly should check out if they haven't seen it, or one of the more obscure? Don't do Rap World, but like a more obscure.
You should watch Rap World, yeah, if you haven't.
A movie that, like, you know, you
feel, I didn't really pick an obscure one.
Yeah. Hot Rod would probably be one of the more off the board picks.
Yeah.
Of the the list.
I subscribe. So when I took film studies at Auburn, which was one of my favorite classes, one of the things they taught is that the school of film criticism that I think I subscribe to the most is you critique a film based on what it's trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Right? You know? So, like, to me,
There Will Be Blood and Hot Rod are not trying to do the same thing.
No.
And
to me, Hot Rod is a 5-star movie because for what it is trying to do, it does the best at doing it.
Absolutely.
Now, it is not an Academy Award winning.